Here.
Here.
Here. Thank you. Our reports of counselors, Counselor Jones.
Advised throughout whatever means you would like, so we can see all points of the issue, all sides of the issue.
Madam Mayor, if I may, Counselor Jones, can I ask who organized that meeting and who invited you?
Yeah, I had a email from a constituent who in Ward 4, and I don't know of any reason why I shouldn't say. Although, unless people don't want them, I mean,
I'm hoping you do say, because I think it's important.
Okay. So there's, and with apologies to her if for any reason she didn't want that known, but there's a constituent in Ward 4 named Yvonne Edwards who had a meeting of Airbnb operators and asked me if I would come and listen to their viewpoint, and I did.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Counselor Price.
I think that given the size of the audience and a couple of resolutions, or at least one that I think would generate a lot of interest, I will hold off and thank you all for coming. It's great to see this amount of civic engagement.
Okay. Counselor?
Thank you, Mayor.
Brownson.
Yeah, I'll keep it short, too. I just wanted to note that I did have a meet the counselor session this last week, and it wasn't at the real convenient time. It was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going to do it again next month, and I'm just going to bump it up to 5:15. See if we can get a few more people to show up. And I just want to—I really appreciate the people that turned out and gave me an opportunity to have a little bit more dialogue with some fellow Astorian residents. My only issue is I only had one person from my ward there, and I'd really like to encourage people that are in Ward 2 to come see me, talk to me in any way they can, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's emailing me through the city, or coming to these meetings, or coming to meet the counselor session. So thank you.
Councilor Nemelo.
Thank you. I saw on Facebook today that it is Bruce Jones's birthday, so happy birthday, Councilor Jones.
Thank you.
And the mayor gave me permission to sing him happy birthday, so please join me. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Bruce. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much. There's no place I'd rather be on my birthday than being part of democracy here.
Okay. I was fortunate enough to go into Portland to see the play Astoria, which was wonderful, at the Armory. And there were a group of us there from the Maritime Museum. And so then afterwards they asked me to come forward, and they gave us a poster that was signed by all the people that were all the actors in the play. And so I mentioned this to Brett today, and we'll try to frame it and put it somewhere. It's just a wonderful play, and if you didn't get the opportunity to see it, it is gone now, but there is going to be a part two, so be sure, and if you see that in the paper, make an attempt to go. I asked them if they could possibly bring it out to Astoria, and then after I saw the play, I thought there's no way. I mean, the set would take up the whole Liberty Theater. So, but it was really a marvelous production and really fun to go see. And the other thing is we had a lunch meeting of Clatsop County mayors and city managers this past week, and that was very interesting to hear what's going on throughout the county in various jurisdictions and what problems we have in common and which ones are somewhat unique to each community. So that was an interesting meeting. Are there any changes to the agenda?
There are some changes.
Mayor, I understand you've added an item 6D, which is entitled Resolution Declaring the City of Astoria as a City of Inclusivity with Respect to Immigrants and Refugees. An item 6E, entitled Gillnetting on the Columbia River. And then an item 6F, Resolution Opposing Proposed Oil, Methanol, and Coal Exports on the Lower Columbia River. But I understand that might be coming off. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay. We have an overflow crowd tonight. There's one seat up front.
Two
up front. Okay, you want to come up? Okay, we have three different presentations this evening. The first is Brooke Stanley of the North Coast Watershed Association. So, Brooke, if you'll give your name and your address.
Brooke Stanley, 488 Lexington Avenue, Astoria. So I wanted to come talk to you tonight from the North Coast Watershed Association. I'm the watershed coordinator at the North Coast Watershed Association, a small nonprofit that works with four watershed councils throughout Clatsop County. And about a year and a half ago, we formed a small working group called the Bear Creek Working Group to look at Astoria's drinking water. And the reason for that was that we have our four watershed councils, but none of them were really looking at Astoria's drinking water, which comes from Napa, but comes to Astoria. So we have a group that meets in Napa and a group that meets in Astoria. And I just wanted to make the City Council aware of the Bear Creek Working Group because we are a resource for both the city and the public to talk about drinking water and to disseminate information about drinking water. And I'll try to keep it brief because we obviously have a lot on the agenda today. But the Bear Creek Working Group formed about a year and a half ago. We're just a citizen group that meets up, talks about drinking water. And because we're a citizen group, there's a lot of different interests that come up. But the one thing that we can all agree on is that we'd love to have more information about Astoria's drinking water. And so we're really lucky in Astoria to own our entire drinking watershed. And so we own the Bear Creek watershed where our drinking water comes from, which means that we're managing it the way the city has chosen to, which is for drinking water quality. And so I just want to start by saying that we're very fortunate in that regard that we even have a say in how our drinking water is managed. And as the Bear Creek Working Group, we're interested in finding out more information, having transparency about our drinking water. So the city already does a lot of testing in the watershed, and we'd like to get that information more readily available to the citizens. So, for example, we get one report each year that tells us what's already happened, and we'd love to be more currently updated on what the drinking water quality is. And so recently we had the haloacetic acid high levels that were in violation, and that sparked a lot of community interest and community questions around the drinking water. And the thing that we definitely saw was that there wasn't any clear understanding of what had happened, and that people found out after the violation had occurred that they'd been drinking the water, and finding out sooner rather than later would be ideal. And so the second point I wanted to make was just that the information coming out soon would be wonderful. For example, I found out about the drinking water because my mom texted me. There was an article in the Daily Historian. Did you know that the drinking water is maybe not safe? And I know about haloacetic acids, and so I thought, oh, well, that's not really a problem for me. But then there was one sentence that said, if you're pregnant or elderly or have a compromised immune system, then you should talk to your doctor. And I happened to be pregnant, and so I stopped drinking the water for a while and eventually decided to call the city and see if the problem was fixed. And it sounded like the problem was fixed, but I was never notified that the problem was fixed. I had the notification that said it should be fixed by the end of the year, but there was never an article in the Daily A that said, you know, we fixed this problem, which would be, you know, those kind of communication breakdowns could really help with the trust of the community for knowing that the city is managing our drinking water well, which I think they are. I think that staff is doing an amazing job of keeping up with the requirements, and if we could improve that communication, there'd just be a better understanding from the public of both what our drinking water quality really is, and then a better perception that the city is serving us in our drinking water quality. Another thing the Bear Creek Working Group is interested in is seeing more testing in the watershed and seeing the results of what testing is already happening. So I already mentioned that the city tests, like for chlorine, I think they test multiple times a day throughout the city. And so getting that information more available would be wonderful. And the fourth and final point I wanted to make was that the Bear Creek Working Group can serve as an ally for the city to disseminate this information and also to apply for grants to either improve our drinking water quality or do more testing or be a resource for working with the public and being an interface between the public and the city in how this water, how our water is managed. And so those were the main points I wanted to make, and I wanted to open up if anyone has any questions. I kind of rushed through that a little bit, but.
Anyone on the council have any questions?
Thank you, Brooke. I think you made really four very good points, and so thanks for the presentation.
You want to make a response? No? Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Great. Yeah. Appreciate and it. If you ever, and so I'm looking forward to working with the Public Works Department and anyone else in the city in regards to this issue. And also, if people are interested, you can find out more about the North Coast Watershed Association by going on our website, clatsopwatersheds.org. And our email is on there, and email or phone for me is just the easiest way to find out more.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, the next presentation is Sarah Lou Heath of the Astoria Downtown Association.
Good evening. So I will
be. We need your name and address.
Yes, Sarah Lou okay. Heath, 854 Glasgow Avenue, Astoria, 97103. So very excited to see everybody here tonight. I am the still fairly new director of Astoria's Downtown Historic District Association. I've been with the organization for about the last 3 months and have been really excited to get to know just the top layer of how Astoria works and what we are doing to work on making sure our downtown is a great place to do business, whether you are in business or visiting a business. So one of our key initiatives each year is to produce the Pacific Northwest Brew Cup. It's a brew festival that's put on by near the Maritime Museum. Last year we had over 3,000 beer lovers in town over the three-day event. We represent not only the breweries in town, but breweries across our region. And we also have local food trucks on site. It was if not new, last year, a fairly new initiative, and we had all of our food trucks sell out of all of their food, and so we were actually pretty happy to showcase this kind of burgeoning new food scene in town. So that's a great event. It takes a ton of volunteers to put on. It is in cooperation with many people, and again, that's more than 3,000 people coming into downtown, a lot of locals and a lot of people from out of town. We also do a lot of work with business development and supporting our local businesses. We put on the Second Saturday Art Walk, which I have seen many of you out and about on Second Saturdays on any given month, but we have between about 12 and 21 galleries and businesses represented, and we do advertising to bring people into the store to make sure our retailers are seeing people on a regular basis and keeping everybody up to date on what is new and different in our really kind of artist, our special artist community that we have. We also do NED Talks, which is a bit of a continuing education for business owners. Last year, I know one of the favorites was about online marketing, how to use Google AdWords and Facebook and some of those tools that, depending on your background, education, age, you might not be so savvy with, but are so important in this day and age. And one of the things that we're very excited to have coming to fruition is our business cluster analysis. It's an economic development tool that shows barriers to purchasing, why people are coming to Astoria, why they might leave Astoria to buy something. That's going to be very significant this year as we work with our local businesses to first work with businesses that are already in town on how they can expand their offerings to better serve their customer base, to work with our property owners to get our vacancy rates lowered so we can attract and recruit either businesses that might want a second location or an entrepreneur that is looking for a storefront downtown. We want to ensure that anybody that comes in as a small business owner has the opportunity to be engaged with the association and also be empowered with data to back up their business decisions. Another important efforts that the ADHDA does is a lot of kind of beautification and design work. Most of you have probably seen the planters that we have downtown. We have 35 sets of two large-scale planters that we've worked with the city to acquire, and we maintain those. We also host downtown cleanup days, which is another volunteer effort, cleaning up litter, weeds, graffiti, stuff like that, just to make sure that our visitors and Astorians have a really beautiful place to chat with one another and do their business. And then another interesting piece of our beautification efforts, the historic glass tiles in the sidewalks are a very specialty item that the ADHDA worked hard with a local glassmaker to reproduce, and we offer a grant program for replacement of those tiles at 50% of the cost. Most recently, now we're getting into things that I was here to see, would be some holiday highlights. The Downtown Association really does a lot beginning in October through the end of the year. In October, we put up our Mitch's Witches, named after the late, great Mitch Mitchum. They're witches that have smacked into poles, and they're one of our fall decorations. We were really happy to have our businesses support us in a revitalization and kind of a dress-up of those this year. We also serve as the fiscal sponsor for Historic Holidays, which decorates the town with the cross, the lighting that goes across the streets along the poles. We also hosted a downtown holiday lighting the day after Thanksgiving. We had a raffle where local businesses participated. A local family got a lot of gift certificates to support their downtown holiday shopping. And all of those kind of combined to really create the holiday spirit in Astoria that makes you want to go downtown, bring your friends and family, and kind of do those fun community activities. For all of these efforts, the Oregon Main Street Organization gave ADHDA 3 awards last year. For outstanding event, the Shore Style Wedding Fair, which we just produced again this January, which went off well. Outstanding special event, which is our volunteer appreciation night, also just happened again, went off well. And the business of the year, everybody's favorite, Fort George Brewery. So since we have such a great crew and we have a couple new counselors, I'll use this slide to explain that Astoria is an affiliated partner with the Oregon Main Street Network. There's only 5 or 6 communities in the state that have attained that status, and we use their 4-step approach to affect revitalization in downtown cores, and that's business development, design, promotions, and organization. And those are 4 committees that we have filled with volunteers and chairs in addition to our board. In between these events, these committees, and ongoing work, we have more than 4,600 volunteer hours last year. That represents an impact of over $100,000 of time that we otherwise would not have going towards the promotion and the health and vitality of our community. And I think that is really impressive. Astoria is a volunteer-centric town, and we are a benefactor of that. Going forward, I just wanted to hit a few things. As many of you know, we've entered a partnership with the city to begin to enforce parking regulations again. We're doing that through a position that we have called the Community Outreach Officer. It's been an ongoing process with the transition of staff at the association, and we do have an offer out to a qualified individual, and we expect that offer to be accepted and the start date to be on March 1st. So we're very excited about that. They will be both working on parking regulations and making sure everybody knows what those are and why they are in place, because it is to promote business. And then secondarily, it's really to promote a kind of a collaborative communication environment. I think that's one of the real assets of the association, is to have nonprofits, businesses, residents, historians all have a place where they can communicate with each other and discuss issues as they come up. As I mentioned, the cluster analysis is going to be complete within the next month. We plan on presenting that to City Council and having public meetings as well, so everybody can have access to that data and also the expert knowledge that comes with it on how to read the analysis. Finally, some placemaking plans for next year. The design committee will be working on securing funding to activate the 13th Street alley, i.e., right now it is an alley that is well lit and the city keeps it clean, but if it can be made more of a place that attracts people to walk through, we can work on our longtime goal of activating Duane Street as a place of commerce. Continued maintenance of the downtown planters, and we will be working with Oregon Main Street on a large-scale grant to improve workforce housing in the downtown core. So we very much appreciate our partnership with the city, and I am happy to answer any questions you might have about what the association is up to.
Any questions from the council? It was a great presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, it seems like you've got a really great grasp of your job quickly, and thanks for all the good work that you do. What's ADHDA's role been in Advance Astoria, the economic development process that we're working on right now, and how might that cluster analysis fit into that? I know you've been working on the cluster analysis since before. I didn't say that, you said it. But since before we embarked on this Advance Astoria,
sure.
So how might this fit in?
Well, I've had many conversations, or I should say several conversations, with Kevin Cronin, the Director of Community Development. He also sits on our Business Development Board, so it has been a close relationship. I've given him feedback about public meetings. I will be attending the March 9th meeting, so having been only 3 months in, I can't say that I've shaped it in any great detail, but I have been able to relay any concerns that the association has and any opportunities we think that exist.
Okay, that's great. I'm glad there's lots of communication. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Great, Sarah.
Now we have a third presentation. This is Nancy Ferber of our Community Development Program. Department.
Hi. So I have a very quick, more of an announcement than a presentation, but it is good news, and I love sharing good news and free money with you. It's a twofer. So last year, the Community Development Department went out for a grant with the CLG Certified Local Government and the SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Office, lots of acronyms. And we were awarded $11,000 for pass-through funds that are now available now, for exterior alterations for homeowners in Uniontown this year. So we are offering a 50-50 match up to $3,000 per project. The project can go above $3,000, but the city's portion will only go up to $3,000. So I'm here to share a little bit about some successful projects in the past, eligibility, and answer questions. And also, I've left some postcards for each of you, as well as at the agenda table in the back for the public, with a little more information and how to follow up and get applications. Eligibility this year for these funds is in Uniontown, which coincides nicely with some of our revitalization efforts going on over there for storefront improvement programs. So this kind of is counterbalance for homeowners who are interested in doing facade improvements. The homes must be designated as historic or be inventoried as contributing in the historic district. And if there are any questions from constituents, I'm happy to answer and dig up maps and information. I've laid this out just as an idea of where that district boundary is. The specific projects themselves are fairly flexible, which is pretty exciting. But work must be visible to the public on a front facade of the building because it's public funds. It can't be for any interior project, and it can't be any additions to a house. It has to be on an existing structure. The projects may require review by HLC, that's the Historic Landmarks Commission, and they definitely require public notice, which, again, I'm happy to walk constituents through. And examples of some previous projects in that kind of realm of facade improvement have included window repair, replacing old windows, replacing siding that's been weathered, restoring porches. Structural repair to preserve integrity of structures isn't the ideal project. Something more visible to the public takes priority, but is also accepted. And again, just no new construction, like a new garage, wouldn't be eligible. This is the fun part. Some before and after photos of previously funded projects have included enclosing a porch and redoing skirting, redoing siding and painting. There's some before and afters. This was a 2014 project. And these were 2014 and 2008. The one on the left is actually the winner of the Dr. Harvey Award for Historic Preservation that we do semi-annually, which included painting, repairing that deck work, some really great before and afters, and it's a really exciting way to build some momentum around historic preservation. Picture on the right was some window work with lead trimming in it that had started to bow out, and the glass had cracked, so that was actually repaired and replaced. And projects aren't limited to this. These are just some successful ones in the past. Our next steps, I need help from you to help spread the word about these funds. Projects need to be completed by the end of July, so the fiscal year and our budgeting is important for this one because they are state funds. So I will have information on all of our community development social media. Again, funds are prioritized for Uniontown this year. Should we not be able to get enough projects or interested participants in Uniontown, it will be opened up to the rest of the city. The same eligibility rules apply about being designated historic or in a contributing district. But I have a wait list started for that, and I will keep all of our social media platforms posted if those funds become available. But I need your help sharing, and I'm more than happy to answer questions.
Nancy, I think you said that the grants have to be in or the work has to be completed by the end of June. Or you said July, but did you mean June?
No, the work has to be done by the end of July.
Okay.
So before or after photos, there's quite a process, but the goal is the end of July.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Okay, new business. Our first regular agenda item is an ordinance revising the legal description to the Astor West First Amendment.
So the Astoria City Council approved an ordinance to expand the Astor West Urban Renewal District in November of last year. After adoption, the city is required to post public notice and submit the amendment to Clatsop County. The county surveyor's office noted an error on the legal description, which was attached to that ordinance, which is a requirement to establish an exact boundary of the expansion. So in response to that, our contracted surveyor has made the correction as requested by the county surveyor, and they have since reviewed that and approved that as to form. Tonight, it's recommended that the City Council hold a first reading of the ordinance and readopt the First Amendment to the Astor West Urban Renewal Plan. I would note that there are no changes to the documents, just correcting the legal description.
Can I just ask for a first reading?
You would just need a motion and a second before you hold
it. We have a motion to have a first reading.
I move we hold first reading of the ordinance and readopt the First Amendment to the Astor West Urban Renewal Plan.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Mr. Cronin, sure. Would you read do our first reading?
Absolutely. Turn this on first. An ordinance making certain determinations and findings relating to and approving a revision to the First Amendment to the Astor West Urban Renewal Plan.
Okay, thank you. Item B is the Spur 14 Waterline Project.
The goal of the Spur 14 Waterline Project is to provide a direct connection to the city's best quality water source. And the goal of that project was to provide better operational control over that water source selection, better flow monitoring, reduced maintenance on existing pressure relief valves, and to reduce the level of disinfection byproducts in the city's treated water. The Spur 14 water source has been utilized, and this is in response to Ms. Stanley's discussion a little bit earlier today about the halocetic acid. The Spur 14 water source has been utilized almost exclusively since January 27th of 2017. We are seeing a very positive impact on water quality now that the water from the source has had a chance to migrate through our distribution system. The last samples for the disinfection byproducts were collected on February 1st of 2017 and were within the maximum contaminant levels. These levels in the February 2017 test results are nearly 60% lower than the November 2016 results. We have our assistant city engineer, Nathan Crater, who will be able to answer any questions from council once I'm completed. But tonight, the item which is being brought for you is a final pay adjustment for this construction project. In June of 2016, council awarded the construction project to Big River. And during construction, there were two pay adjustments processed in the amount of $6,440.51. The final pay adjustment, which is before you tonight, accounts for unforeseen conditions associated with the existing infrastructure location and changes in scope necessary. That totals $26,229.89. While this is within the new city manager's spending authority, this item is being brought to you tonight to close out the project and also to review the preliminary readings with regards to water quality issues. So tonight it's recommended that council authorize staff to approve the final pay adjustment as noted above. And again, Mr. Crater is available to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Any comments or questions from the council?
Yes. Mr. Crater, is it possible to meet or to address some of the questions that Ms. Stanley brought up about having additional reporting or additional testing? I mean, I think you do additional testing that perhaps just isn't as widely reported as perhaps could be, or can you discuss
sure.
that a little bit?
Nathan Crater, Assistant City Engineer. So actually, I came to support the change order specifically. I can talk to that a little bit and anything that I can't fill in. Jeff Harrington, the city engineer, can probably fill in. So we do quite a bit of testing on a regular basis, up to a daily basis, on the water system for various items. We typically only report what is required by the state. A lot of that testing is a pretty involved process. And so we can certainly work with that group to come up with maybe some strategies to get that information that they need in balancing, you know, staff time needs with obviously releasing some additional information that could be helpful to meet some of their goals. Does that kind of give you a...
It does, and if maybe the city manager will take it from there, but that was...
Right. I mean, I think what we'll be able to look at is, I think also, I mean, I think be able to have some dialogue between the Public Works Department and the working group would be good. I think the question's going to come down, if we're going to be looking at some additional formal reporting above it, what is the cost of that, and how does that translate into water rates, and would we need to compensate that with additional water rate increases to factor that in? For that, so it's a good time to be having those discussions at the budget time.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Any other questions from the council? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
Can I make the motion?
Sure.
Shall I make the motion?
Mm-hmm.
I move we authorize staff to approve the final pay adjustment in the amount of $26,279.89.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. And item C are our city council goals, which we worked on in January. So they are before us, and would you like to talk about them?
Sure. The draft city council goals were presented very briefly at your last city council work session, and it was noted that these would be brought back and placed on the next regular city council agenda. So these are following up from what was prepared as a part of the goal-setting session in January. The council can choose to discuss them if there are any proposed changes, have dialogue about that, and you know, when the council has come to a point where they are comfortable with them, look at considering adoption. That could be tonight or it could be another night.
Okay. Any comments on the goals? Anyone?
I had a question about the housing goal. Implement the provisions contained in the City of Astoria Affordable Housing Study. And my question was, I have two places where there are recommendations, and I just wanted to know which ones we were talking about. There's a, let's see what I have here. I have a memo from Mr. Estes dated October 27th, 2015, and there's a strategy with a number of bullet points. And then there is, in the housing study itself, dated July 2015, there are some recommendations. So I just was wondering, which provisions are we talking about?
So it was my understanding from the council work session, it was the earlier document, the document which is referred to as the City of Astoria Affordable Housing Study.
So that would be this.
Of July,
so that would
July.
Be the recommendations that start on page, that are on 17 and 18
right.
There.
That's that was my understanding. That was the direction from the City okay. Council was to look at the recommendations contained in that initial 2015 study.
I kind of thought so, too. I just wanted to confirm. Thank you. Because I like, there's some difference. There is some difference in particularly in emphasis, and I prefer the one that's in the housing study. So that's good news to me. Thank you. That was the only question I had.
Okay. Councillor Jones, are you just looking thoughtful, or do you want
to? No, I thought the city manager accurately captured our thoughts and discussions and what we recommended, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'd like to say I'm comfortable with it, too. I think that you got exactly what what it had boiled down to after that session. So I'm looking forward to actually, you know, making good progress on these, and I think they're clear and it gives us a good place to start.
I think Mr. Estes also captured our day-long conversation very well and our goals. I'm very proud of these goals. You know, it is anticipated the library renovation project would be completed by 2020. I think that is an ambitious goal. I hope that indeed we can do that. I don't want to nitpick about the word anticipated, but I certainly hope that it would be complete by 2020. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone want to make a motion to adopt these goals?
I move that we adopt the City Council draft goals fiscal year 2017-2018.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Item 6D is an added item, and this is a resolution for immigrant inclusivity. Mr. Gutierrez.
Jorge Gutierrez, 3734 Franklin Avenue, Astoria. Wow, look at this crowd. quería primero empezar para decir que me da mucho orgullo ver a todas las familias hispanas que vinieron. Aparte de todo lo que está pasando, me da gusto que tengan el valor de venir aquí y presentarse. I just said that I just wanted to reach out to our Hispanic families that are here today and say how proud I am of them for showing up today. So we actually ended up composing just a statement that we want to read. So, good evening, Mayor and City Councilors. I stand here today on behalf of the Hispanic and immigrant community of Astoria to request that you consider adopting an inclusivity resolution. Our immigrant community has expressed fear and concern about what is happening at the local, state, and national level, and we believe that now is the time to explore the possibility of an inclusivity resolution. To be clear, we are not asking that the city become a sanctuary city. Instead, we are asking for a resolution that affirms the progressive values of our city and that recognizes that our immigrant population is vital to our community and to our local economy. Most importantly, in the face of the continued rhetoric that is attempting to dehumanize this population, an inclusivity resolution sends a clear message to our Hispanic community that we stand with them, that they are our friends, our family, and our neighbors. We urge that the city move forward with exploring this possibility, but we also urge that it is done with prudence. At a time when policies at the federal level are changing rapidly, it is important that we remain nimble in our approach and that our actions are moved forward by reason and not by fear. To that end, the language from a sample inclusivity resolution has been provided to the city. We ask that this go through the appropriate channels to determine how this type of resolution might be adopted in our city. During that process, we hope that we continue to engage the Hispanic community so that whatever path the city follows, their voice is taken into account during the process. On behalf of the Hispanic community, we thank you for your continued support and for your consideration of this request. We are confident that we live in a city that opposes any form of discrimination, including that which is based on national origin, race, or ethnicity. We know that the city will take the right steps to ensure that everyone, including our immigrant community, feels welcomed and supported in our city. Thank you. So if there are any questions, please let me know.
Do you need to translate that for your...
I already did earlier.
Jorge, the resolution that you provided for us is just a one that we can work with then?
Absolutely. So the resolution was drafted by various attorneys from CAUSA, mm-hmm. and from the ACLU. Mm-hmm. And this particular one, I believe, was the one that was enacted in Portland. And there's been about 6 to 8 cities around the state that have adopted a similar resolution. I have been in contact with CAUSA and the ACLU, and they have affirmed their support. If the city chooses to explore this, they will work with the city to draft something that makes sense for us.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really good start. I think you've covered a lot of the things that we want to make sure are covered. Mm-hmm. We value our Latino community, and we want to make sure that they feel safe here.
Well, and one thing that I'll add to or emphasize is that any sort of action we take, I think that it's important that we do so by weighing all the facts first. I think there's a lot of fear right now, and there's a lot of headlines popping up. So I think that we all have really great intentions to act and to do something. But I also think that sometimes we need to step back and look at the big picture and look what's going to make the most sense. And so I think that's part of our request here today, is that we start looking at that, see what makes the most sense for our city.
Great. Thank you so much for initiating this. Mm-hmm. Any comments from anyone?
Well, I'd just like to express my appreciation, too, of bringing this forward and keeping this dialogue going, because I think it's extraordinarily important. I think the more we do to establish a very positive stance in regards to our community and our whole community. And I can't say how much I appreciate all the people that are here just for this reason, if for no other reason. I think it's just so important right now. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Astoria was built by immigrants, and I stand by the immigrant and Hispanic community in Astoria. I'm in full support of this resolution.
Thank you.
Okay. So I would like to see it start with a whereas, which I'll give this to the city manager, and we can talk to our city attorney my fellow counselors, that reflects what Councilor Nimmelowill just said, which is, whereas the city of Astoria, Oregon, from the earliest first Americans, the Clatsops, has continually prospered through the labor and imagination of immigrants, British, Russian, and Canadian traders, the German-American John Jacob Astor, whose expedition built the first American settlement here, the Finns, Norwegians, Swedes, and Chinese who worked the fishing and canning industry. And just have that as our first whereas, because it speaks entirely of our community and our commitment and our need of immigrants, and we welcome our southern neighbors as well.
Thank you.
So I fully support the spirit of the resolution, and of the 13 clauses, I absolutely unequivocally support 1 through 11. I do have a few questions about 12 and 13, and I guess I'll direct those to the city manager, and he might redirect to Chief Johnston. So in regards to the second to last clause, are city funds, personnel, or equipment currently used for the enforcement of any federal immigration law at this time?
And that's a good question, and Chief Johnston is prepared to answer that question tonight.
So the state law, as currently configured, actually prohibits the use of city dollars for that purpose. So, no, we do not.
Okay. And then and the same question on the last clause. So is the provision of services or benefits by the city currently contingent upon a resident's federal immigration status?
No, it's not.
So I just wanted to clarify from my own thinking that these two last clauses would put prohibitions on things we currently already don't do.
Correct.
And can you clarify me, because I just don't remember the details enough of the discussion on sanctuary city status. In what way are these two, the 12th and 13th clauses, the last two clauses on the resolution, different from the language that was in sanctuary city status? In other words, I want to be sure that this isn't essentially a sanctuary city, but with a different name.
Right. I find this to be very different from that concept, okay, in the fact that just the name sanctuary implies something.
Right.
And because we cannot control federal actions within our city, it seems presumptuous to say that we are a sanctuary city when we have ICE agents that are stationed within Astoria that are active in certain activities, that if we say we're a sanctuary city, we ought to be one. And I don't think we have we don't actually have the ability to do that. This we have the ability to do, because we already are.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we don't usually encourage applause in this place, but I'm going to.
Mayor, I saw one gentleman with his hand up in the front row. I don't know if he still wants to talk or if you're taking public comments now.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
How you doing? My name is Gustavo Valadez, 5 McCain Road, Apartment 2, Astoria, Oregon, 97103. It's just my way to see things and where are. I not pretend that. Be unrespectful. Sorry for my English. I'm getting nervous. I mean no respect and disrespect for anybody. But with our new employee, Donald Trump, because that's what it is, our new employee, if you look at the big picture, he, on the long run, I don't think that's my way to see things on the news and the newspaper. He ain't going to do any good for this country. And this country has been made up about immigrants, Chinese, Russian, Italians, the whole country, not this community, not just this community. So I'd like to thank you to the chief police not to take actions. I mean, support this executive action he just signed to enforce or make the police act like a federal agents, because they're not. They're local polices. So thank you for that. And then I can go and tell my friends, don't worry about the police. If you do something wrong, well, pay the consequences, right? But don't be afraid. If they stop you, they're going to ask you for your papers. Just try carefully and be a good citizen, like most of our Latino and all the immigrants are. I know there's a bad people out there. I can deny that. So just I like you guys to consider that. There's a big picture. So, gosh, I got a lot of things to do, but my English is not good, and I'm nervous. So that's all I need to say, all I want to say so far.
Thank you
for having us here, and you're going to see me more a lot around these meetings. So,
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, and I'm sorry.
Your English is way better than my Spanish.
Yeah.
Well, you said it. I'm going to argue that.
Okay. Our next item is...
Mayor, are you looking at wanting to take action tonight, or are you wanting to bring this back?
I think that Jorge has recommended, actually, that we take a look at it and have... our city attorney look at it, the police chief look at it, just make sure that everything lines up and that it's and if there are any questions from the council, I think they should direct those either to our city attorney or to the chief of police and make sure that we have it covered the way we want to have it, the resolution. And then we'll bring that back
to the next meeting.
To the next meeting.
Okay. I just want to make sure it's clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'd also like to say I think that Cindy's preamble there would be a nice addition to it.
Yeah,
I think just that recognition is important. This is nothing new. This is what – you're right. This is what this country's built of. So – and I really feel compelled to say also that I hope that the Hispanic community – I haven't heard anything of any kind of abuses or any kind of trouble in our community being perpetrated on your community. But if there has, I hope that you aren't afraid to come to the proper authorities and let it be known, because I don't think we need to tolerate anything like that. It's just not necessary. Thanks.
Okay. So we'll bring that back to the next meeting then. The next item was added. We had a request to write a letter supporting gill netting, the right to continue fishing on the Columbia and maintain the 2016 fishing limits the way they were without any changes. And I just wanted to – We'll draft that letter and sign that letter and send it, but I wanted to make sure there was agreement on the council.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then the last one is a resolution opposing proposed oil, methanol, and coal exports that was withdrawn. The person who wanted to present that resolution was unable to be here this evening. So we'll probably bring that issue up at a later time. So that's the end of our agenda items. If there's anyone in the audience who'd like to bring any other items forward, you're welcome to do that at this time. Okay.
Jennifer Cameron, Law Tech, 1820 Southeast 3rd Street, Astoria.
Misha Cameron, Law Tech, same address.
I think we kind of have some separate statements on the same topic. Both of us just kind of wanted to respond to the issues that Jorge has brought up. And I just kind of wanted to speak from the position of having gone through the process of getting a green card, which I think that most people, even though most of us are at some point in our backgrounds have immigrants, it's often been many generations since you've been through the process of getting a green card. And my husband, I'm an American citizen, my husband is German, and we went through this process a couple of years ago, and it was, it's just incredibly complicated. And it's confusing. There are times when you have two different forms that are supposedly asking you for the same information but really say kind of contradictory things. And we're both, I'm a native English speaker, we're both, you know, educated and have, I don't know, I certainly had the expectation that we would be able to figure this out on our own. And we did, but it kind of took a long time, and it was, I think, at least $1,000 that we had to invest in this. And it's just something I think that most people don't realize because you don't, you know, not a lot of us actually have had this experience. And it's something that I think is important to think about when we're talking about undocumented immigrants in our community. And those costs that we paid, about $1,000 a couple of years ago, three, 4 years ago, those costs all went up by 20% this past December. So it's really a lot of money in addition to all these other kind of like hurdles that a person goes through when they try to become or try to get a green card in this country. And I also think it's just important to me to stress that I think we all know this, but the overwhelming majority of undocumented immigrants in this country are really economic migrants and should be recognized as such. Just like all of, you know, the rest of our ancestors did, you know, they really risked a lot trying to come here and make a better life, and they're doing, you know, same thing that my German ancestors did, you know, some of the hardest labor. They work long hours, they're often exploited, and just not recognized for the contribution they make to our society. I mean, we have, you know, good quality, you know, kind of products and lifestyle because of the work of a lot of these people, and really simply they just deserve our respect and our protection, and I'm really glad to be kind of part of a community that I think sees this. Thank you.
I just really briefly wanted to add an immigrant's perspective. I feel awkward standing here with so many other immigrants and as a white male being given a microphone. So I'll keep this brief and just kind of share my own perspective as a German immigrant by telling a little anecdote about American history. And one of the greatest Americans I know, Martin Luther King, who said in, excuse me, this shouldn't be as emotional for me because I'm not actually being deported because I'm white. So in his letter from a Birmingham jail, Martin Luther King said, "We should never forget that everything Adolf Hitler did in Germany was legal, and everything the Hungarian freedom fighters did in Hungary was illegal. It was illegal to aid and comfort a Jew in Hitler's Germany. Even so, I am sure, had I lived in Germany at the time, I would have aided and comforted my Jewish brothers." And I would really hope that every one of you, not as city councilors, not as the mayor, not as elected officials, but as fellow members of this community, find that strength in yourselves to help people that need it the most right now. Thank you.
Okay, Loretta.
Loretta Maxwell, 1574 Grand Avenue, Grandview Bed and Breakfast. This is sort of emotional for me. A lot of things are happening in my life right now, and I'm sorry, there have been Facebook postings by some of our counselors regarding an Airbnb permit that's being, I might be using the wrong word, that's being considered next Tuesday at the Planning Commission. I'm discussing this here with all of you because I believe that the Airbnb people who don't realize this is happening are undercutting the small business and, in particular, our B&B. We're in our 30th year of operation, and over the last about 3 years, our business has come down a little at a time, to the point where I had one room rented in January. In the month of January, I had one room rented. This is really distressing for my mom. She's thinking of everything she can to figure out what the problem is. Almost every call I get, I make a reservation from. So it's not that what we're saying is turning them away. When I read Cindy's post, I looked on Airbnb website, and there are at least 67 locations. And, you know, one person may think I have one bedroom or I have an apartment over my garage or whatever, but each one is taking away. It's a little bit like turning Walmart over to our small businesses in town, is how I see it. We've attempted to get we don't have a mortgage on the house right now, but we tried to get a loan, an equity loan, and ironically, because we have a commercial zoning on our property, we were denied. We're trying other ways of generating more income. One of the objections that was mentioned in these posts was that people who are renting to Airbnb people don't want to rent to monthly renters, which is what we need in town. We need places for employees to work that are close by town. My employee that worked the most this summer lives in Napa, and he's not always able to get to work. And right now I can't even give him work. We are now renting some of our rooms on a monthly basis. And another person expressed that was a dangerous thing to do because you couldn't get the people out of your house or something. And when we rent to people for a monthly rental, they have to sign a contract. We have specific rules that they have to abide by, and they do that. We really have not had any problem with that at all. We have actually one nice lady that comes year after year and stays for several months in the wintertime.
Loretta, excuse me for interrupting, but you're going to run up against time. Far be it from me to tell you to wrap up. It's not my job, but I'm going to say that.
And would you like me to stop? I'll stop.
I'll ask the mayor. But I want to thank you for your comments, and I want to clarify one thing because it's very important. I have been very outspoken on Facebook, and I might be here tonight as well, advocating for restricting homestay lodging any further from where it is. But I have always talked about it at that level. I have not and would not
separate out one particular permit. That would be unethical for me to do. And so it's always been at the level of homestay lodging, looking at our codes and at what homestay lodging in general does or to our community. And that's all. I wanted to say that.
So my comments about
your comments are very well taken, other than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
That's all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Okay. Mayor, do you want me to use a 3-minute timer on my phone?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay.
We'll have 3 minutes.
Okay. Hi, I'm Matt Stanley, 664 Kensington Avenue. I'm here as a business operator. I'm the general manager of the Astoria Co-op Grocery. And I'm here because I just want to make sure you're hearing from enough local business folks that housing is in a crisis stage right now. I feel that my position, part of my job description now as apartment broker, is really, really hard for people who are working, especially entry-level jobs, to find a decent place to live. So I've had people living in RVs and vans, and sometimes they just have to leave town because they can't find a place that's affordable. So I just ask that the council, you know, whatever comes before you as far as Airbnb, just to really take our time thinking through what is the best decision for the longevity of our town. If we want to have nice cafes and restaurants and grocery stores to shop at, we need people to work at them. And we want people that offer good service, and so we need a place for those folks to live. And it just in the last 12 to 18 months has become really noticeable that it's very difficult for people to find a place to live here. So I think that's all I wanted to say, but just, you know, please really consider all the options here. And we're you know, going to plan to expand our operation, and we're going to need to hire many, many more people, and it makes me really nervous thinking that they're not going to have a place to live. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
Dwight Caswell, 457 Alameda. I come to you as a small businessman. My small business happens to be an Airbnb. This price has said a number of things on a Facebook page and to the newspaper. One thing that Airbnb threatens long-term housing in this city. Second, that there aren't very many people who qualify to have an Airbnb, and that seems unfair. The two statements seem contradictory. If we don't have very many people who can have Airbnbs, then we can't threaten long-term housing. There are two kinds of Airbnbs. One is the whole place, what they call it, and that's about half of the Airbnbs here, which are not 67, but in the 40s. If you include everybody in the area, you're up to 67, but in Astoria, it's 40-some. About half of those are the whole place. I can't speak to those because I'm not one of them, but I suggest the city take a look at how many of those places used to be used for long-term housing or might in the future. 20% of them are suites on Pier 39. Another one's a bus. So they aren't long-term housing. What we do is rent a spare bedroom. We would never consider renting that for long-term housing. We rent it when it's convenient for us to do that, because otherwise, on those rare occasions when I snore, my wife wouldn't have any place to go to. I've written over 300. I'm a freelance writer. Most of you probably read my stuff. I've written over 300 stories on this area. And one of my selling points is, if you come to stay with us, I can tell you where to go. I can recommend this or that. I bring people to town, stay in my place, who can't afford, most of them can't afford, to go to a hotel. If they have to spend two or three times as much as they're spending with us, they are going to go somewhere else, or they're going to camp, or they're going to have a day trip here. I'm not competing with long-term housing. I'm not competing with hotels or motels. I'm competing with campgrounds. And what I do is I bring people who might otherwise not come to this town and spend the night, and I recommend a hotel or rather a restaurant or a brewery or whatever. I have sent so many people to Bowie Beer, they should pay me a commission. You know, I am bringing people to this town and having them spend money here that they wouldn't otherwise spend. And I don't know what's bad about that. So that's the other side of Airbnb. And I think we serve a valuable service. We provide a valuable service for this town. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Hi, Fred.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you. My name is Fred Bone, and I'm from 824 35th Street, but we also have a home in Louisiana. And New Orleans just passed an Airbnb ordinance, and we've been following that very closely. And the reason is because, like right about now, the town fills up. There is not an empty hotel room, motel room, nothing, because of Mardi Gras. Hundreds of thousands of people come for that event. Now, if there was some event in Astoria that filled up every hotel, every motel, fine. In that case, the Airbnbs, I would accept that. But they don't. There's plenty of vacancies. And for that reason, I'm opposed to short-term housing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
Hi, my name is Diana Bartolotta. I live at 3658 Franklin. I didn't realize Airbnb was going to be a topic today. I came just to observe, but I've run a shared house for 5 years. And I have hosted on Airbnb in the past. I have long-term housemates. I've done a combination. My mother also hosts Airbnb in Florida. So I think there's a couple of issues that we're convoluting, and I just hope that the counselors are looking into this and asking the right questions, because the other gentleman who hosts Airbnb made an excellent point. They're not in conflict. Right now, I have no Airbnb rooms. I have the house full with, I have a college student, I have a Coast Guard guy. And when I'm figuring out what I'm going to do with a particular room, I think about the whole house, the people in there, the type of room. There's a lot more that goes into that question. And I'm always looking at whether it makes more sense to have a local there, to have a college student there, to have an Airbnb guest there. And they're just really different questions that you ask when you're trying to figure that out. So I don't think it should be the long-term landlords versus the true B&Bs versus the Airbnbs, because we all serve a different function. And the other gentleman said the same thing I would say, which is I send a ton of business to town. When people come in, they stay with me because I give them a map that I get at the Chamber of Commerce, and I ask them, what do you want to do? And I say, oh, Bowie would be a great match for you. Fort George would be a great match for you. And I make a little agenda for them. And so I want to just second what the other Airbnb host said, because I think Airbnb hosts might not speak up, but somehow we're being vilified, and we, I think, as a community, can find some solutions to this without pitting people against each other. So I just kind of want to throw that out there, that let's really think about how to meet all of our needs instead of pitting one against the other.
Thank you. I'd like to talk with you after the meeting if you don't mind
absolutely.
Staying. Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Don't allow twice.
Oh, I got you.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. Yes.
Hi there.
My name is Alexander Thompson. I live at 822 35th Street, Astoria. I would like to address how we are being charged Portland rent prices and we don't make Portland money. Landlords in this town have gotten incredibly greedy, and it's just because of how selective and how hard it is to find a house around here right now. And we really have to get constructive right now and figure something out. I don't want to see Astoria whitewashed into Monterey, California. I want to keep the culture of this town as a working man's town, and I'm service industry in this town. I work at the Commodore Hotel. I pretty much do everything that the guys at the Airbnbs do, but I get paid, you know, I work for somebody else. Anyways, all I'm trying to say is we have to get constructive. We have to figure out something. We have to control the rents. We have to do something along this because this is getting ridiculous. The average income in this county is like 46 grand a year, and when the average one bedroom is going to for a grand to 1400, it's becoming economically not feasible around here. I love Astoria to death, but I truly think it's becoming poverty with a view. Service industry folks like myself are lucky to make half that, hardly even that. I'm seeing all the beautiful people that make this community great getting priced out on a regular basis, and it's heartbreaking because that's what makes Astoria amazing, is all these people. I just feel like, how am I ever going to be able to find a home to buy when I'm being robbed by my landlord once a month for my hard-earned paycheck? Thank you. That'll be all. Thank you.
Okay. Brenda Harper, I live at the Astor Hotel. And yeah, I would just like to reiterate what Alexander just said, is that, you know, I have friends that do Airbnb too, but I think they're getting extra income from it versus, you know, you can take someone who has their Airbnb business, then you can pit them against someone who needs a place to live. And I would choose the person who needs a place to live, because versus an Airbnb owner who is, sure, they're bringing business to the town, but the weight is not, it's not proportionate compared to, you know, you taking a someone who comes in and can afford to spend $60 a night, you know. If you look at how much that person is making, how much the homeowner's making with Airbnb versus how much they would, if they were to rent it out to someone who lives here in town, that's not equal, okay? They're making way more money. I mean, they're taking advantage, you know, versus someone who actually lives here year round, is in the community, and deserves to have an affordable place to live, and deserves a place to live at that. So I would not agree with Airbnb needing to have this. Sure, they say it's a balance, but it's not. You can do the math. You can see how much they're making versus how much they would pay. Someone who lives here would pay for rent. So do the math. I've done the math myself because, hey, Airbnb is a great business, but, you know, if you want to clean everybody out, go for it. But please don't. That's what I have to say.
Anyone else? Okay.
My name's Jessamine. I'm at 285 Melbourne Avenue, apartment number 1, Astoria, Oregon, 97103. And I wasn't going to talk tonight, but there's been so many people that what they said was really inspirational. And this is really hard because my best friend is Dwight Caswell, who got up earlier and spoke. And I hope I still see you for dinner next week. But As a renter, I think I'm, and I don't know what the right solution is, but I do think when you're trying to figure out something like this, it becomes really critical to ask the people who are quote-unquote at the bottom. So like just like in Jorge's advocacy of speaking to the Hispanic community about what is potentially negatively impacting them. I'm not saying it's the same thing in this case, but I would encourage people to consider the perspective of the renter, or like Matt Stanley said, the people who are having trouble finding places to live. And I know there's people saying that Airbnb is, it's not the issue. I would just encourage looking at the renter's situation again when trying to make this decision. I do know that as a renter and someone who's been looking to buy my first home, and I work full time and I run a nonprofit and I volunteer at the radio station, so I think I work hard like the rest of you, but I first contacted a real estate agent in March of 2015, so it's going on 2 years. And the interesting thing is that I don't know what the correlation is. I mean, I could guess, but every single house that I've been outbid on, even bidding over the asking price, has been on Airbnb. So I think that buying houses sometimes at a premium, as they have been over the last couple of years, like Alexander was saying, that money is going to have to come from somewhere. And again, it's people looking to, you know, tourism. Airbnb makes more money than a renter to kind of fill those gaps. And I know that that's certainly not all the case with Airbnb establishments, so I don't want to make that blanket statement towards everybody. I think that Airbnb does serve a purpose, but I, again, would encourage to maybe consider the perspective of those of us at the bottom of the economic status quo, I guess. I do have one question. It's my understanding that it won't affect the Airbnbs currently in place if there was a change. So.
Okay. I believe that's correct. Yeah.
That is correct. I would like clarification from our city attorney, though. There's one point that I'm not clear on, and I don't know if you've had a chance to look into this, Blair, but given that there are conditional use permits issued for homestays in the R1 zone, but simple business licenses, not permits issued in the R2 and R3 zone, how would those properties in the R2 and R3 zone that simply have business permits to operate homestays, how would those be affected if there were any changes to the development code?
Well, I'm not really sure. It's a permitted use in R2 and R3.
So, right. And so if there were a change to our development code regarding homestays and a person operating a homestay had a business license, would that stand in the same way that somebody who had a permit in the R1 zone, a conditional use, would they get to keep their homestay?
It becomes a difficult question because of the way the city of Astoria issues or doesn't issue land use permits. You don't issue a typical permit in the city. It's usually affiliated with a building permit. So you almost have to look at it to see how that Airbnb establishment or homestay establishment was created.
Okay. But ultimately, I think you're correct, Jessamine, from my understanding. It could get a little bit complicated if there were to be any changes. But, you know, once somebody has the okay to do something, you know, they get to keep their permit.
Yeah, I certainly don't want to alienate, you know, the people that are running legitimate Airbnbs and, you know, like my friend Dwight. I will say that, though, you know, again, he and his wife own two houses, and there's a lot of us just looking for a place to rent. Thank you.
Chris?
Hello, Chris Hafer, 687 12th Street. I'm a general contractor, historical preservationist. real estate investor, own many rentals, and have an old house that I'm trying to maintain. And I think it goes without saying that there are a lot of homeowners that are kind of strapped by their costs, especially owning a historic home in a historic town. And so they find ways to try to offset some of those costs. And that's also supported by Jason Brandt from the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, who says homestays are a great way for families and people to make ends meet. Now, I sympathize and I can fully relate with renters too, but homeowners have costs, and some of those are pretty expensive, especially working on a historic building. I think what we need to look at is how can we provide more housing? Because the issue is we don't have enough housing on all levels, not just affordable housing, but for families. And we can take derelict buildings and fix them up. I'm doing two of them right now. One of them used to be a duplex, but the non-conditional use says I can't have it as a duplex and it has to be single family. There's one unit. Actually, there's two units because it wasn't in use. That's true with another fellow who had a house that was a triplex but can only use it as a duplex. So I think it's important to look at our non-conditional use, maybe try to find a way where we can keep some of these older homes that used to be used for housing when the population was, what, twice the size once with fewer buildings? Maybe relax some of the restrictions on things like boarding houses because they can't become boarding houses because of parking issues. So my house used to be 10 apartments. It can't be 10 apartments because a non-conditional use in the 80s has to be single family. So you've kind of seen with some of this non-conditional use permit, housing options eroding from Astoria in old buildings that used to be used as housing. So maybe we can find a way to make that easier for people to try to provide housing. And I do believe strongly that buildings that have apartments in them should be used for housing and apartments, monthly rentals. But for homeowners trying to make ends meet, let's not take away options from them. A lot of them you're going to find might try Airbnb, but they might also decide that's too much work changing the sheets. I think I'll get a roommate. And if you, there you have it.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Well, this is a tough topic. There's no doubt about it. I can sympathize with people on both sides of this issue. It's a really hard issue. City Manager, can you get us caught up to where we are right now? What are our plans upcoming? Well,
We've had discussions about affordable housing, but at this point in time, there's been no direction from City Council to amend the code with regards to transient lodging. That is what we would refer to as the Airbnb units. Something that our city planner, Nancy Ferber, and I are looking at is looking at the code enforcement opportunities to be able to better address the concerns. We're also starting to look at, you know, is there a permit process to address what our city attorney mentioned with regards to the units that are permitted outright in the R2 and the R3 zone? Is there a permit process whereby someone would go through some review if they're wanting to create an Airbnb to ensure that there's adequate parking there, and if the council wanted any additional standards to add them, but if the council is wanting to look at the concept of prohibitions, that direction would need to come from the city council, because we don't have that direction at this point.
Okay. Any comments from the council?
Yes, I'd like to address a few things. Just one other clarification. Mr. Caswell, you mentioned a contradiction that I said about maybe too many homestays versus there are not then enough houses to accommodate them. Actually, in that, I was talking about two different things. On the accessory dwelling units is where I've talked about that is a limited number of homes in Astoria that can either A, have the access to capital or the room in their homes, either a garage or a basement, to put an accessory dwelling unit in it, which is different from a homestay. And I'm going to stick with homestay lodging versus Airbnb because there are many other ways of having a homestay other than going through Airbnb. You know, the big issue, though, is that making policy that will have long-term effects on a city's livability, its character, its economy, based on anecdote and lobbying of people who have a financial interest or would like to have a financial interest in a particular matter, just is not sensible. And at this time, we simply don't have very much data about the number of homestays that are out there. These are some of the questions that I think that we should have before we allow more. And it's not a matter of pitting anyone against anyone. There are anywhere from, I don't know, I've heard 29, I've heard 40, I've heard 44, 60. We don't know how many homestays there are. As Councillor Nimmowell was saying, if you got a conditional use permit for a homestay lodging, that is yours in perpetuity until you sell your home. And for all, I'm not really clear whether it could even perhaps be transferred. If with a business permit for something, that's something that, I mean, in my mind, unless there's like this giant rush and there are 1,000 tomorrow, you know, grandfather in what is there, not looking to take anything away from any existing thing. Rather, we're just trying to advocate policies that are for residents. We all know, in spite of the many things that we don't know, we do know that cities that build places that have policies in place that work well for the majority of their residents attract visitors. In fact, that is exactly what has happened to Astoria and why we talk about this now and why the pressures exist. Let me just give you an example of some of the questions that I think need to be answered before we go forward. You know, how many are currently existing? What kind of amenities, facilities do they offer? Where are they? What kind of zone are they in? When were they permitted? So, I mean, are we experiencing a big rise or what? How are they inspected? How are they monitored? How much did they generate in transient tax for the city? Are there effects? Can we quantify effects on the hotels, motels, the bed and breakfasts? Loretta's Grandview Bed and Breakfast is not the only established B&B that's been here for years. When I came here the first time in 1995, there really wasn't a great hotel to stay in. I stayed in a B&B. Over the particularly the past 10 years, we've had a lot of hotels have come up. B&Bs took a hit on that, and now they're taking hits on homestays. So those kind of small questions, that data gathering, can then lead to the larger questions, which is what we really want to get to is, you know, how many do we want? Do we want it olly-olly oxen-free? Look at what is happening in our other cities in Clatsop County and Cannon Beach and Seaside and Gearhart, which had visitor populations for a very long time. They've always been tourist towns. Astoria is kind of new to this. All those cities are doing whatever they can to walk back now because they've lost their year-round communities. If we do that, who's going to shop at Penny's, at Sears, at the downtown frame shop, at all of these places that make us a working city? So, you know, why do we want them if we decide we do? Where do we want them? I mean, do we want to have, you know, whole streets that are, you know, basically, you know, half or three-quarters homes? Because, yeah, especially here on the North Slope, you've got a lot of old homes with older people living in them. Are we looking at a housing situation or a social services situation? I have empathy for all of that, but I again, it's, we can't do this on an anecdotal basis. It's our jobs as city councilors to look ahead 20, 30 years and try to do what will be good, keep us on a path for the future. And so that's it. I mean, I hope that we will have a lot more discussion about this. I hope we will get a lot more data. I spent the last several hours on the last 2 days looking at Airbnb specifically, and I made a spreadsheet, and I found that, I mean, Airbnb, if you go to Airbnb, you will see 69 or 67 number, but many of those are not within the city limits, which is what I'm concerned with here. I found 29. Four of them are at Pier 39, so I discount them in what I'm about to tell you. But one of the things that one of the pushbacks I've heard is, "Oh, these are just a room in our house. We're just a room in our house." Well, let me tell you something. 11 out of the 25 units are places that are on Airbnb today can take more than four people, accommodate more than four people. Only three of the 25 have a shared bathroom. The rest have a private bathroom. 16 of the 25 offer a full kitchen all by yourself. 17 of the 25 have a private entrance. 15 of the 25 are not owner-occupied. So if this is any indication, really, if this is a good sample of what's going on, these aren't just people who've written out a house, room in their house and sharing everything. This is a whole different ball of wax. And of course, one can't say that if you didn't allow any more of these, that people who could do this would instead rent their room out to a brewery worker or to a doctor or a nurse who's coming into the new cancer center or who's there already. But maybe some of them would. And so anyway, I'll just leave it at that.
Councillor Price, thank you so much for doing that research. It's something that I've wanted to do and haven't gotten to, and I agree with all those questions. But one other question that I would add is our community development department's ability to enforce the sheer number of properties. I don't think that it's possible. I think the fact that we've got so many full houses being marketed right now is evidence of that, because we don't allow full houses that aren't owner-occupied to be rented out to short-term renters in Astoria. That does not exist in our residential zones. That exists. So right now, we've got rampant illegal properties. And, you know, our community development department does all sorts of things, looks at sites for the new library, gives out grants for historic preservation. If you want to build a deck, gives out building permits. And how many people do we have doing that work? Not very many, like just less than a handful of people. We've got our planner doing a lot of that work. You know, I agree very much with many of the statements that people here made tonight, especially Jessamine and Brenda, and I really hope that you'll continue speaking up. You know, Jessamine, you're right. We really need to look at the renters and who this is going to impact. The problem right now is not people who have houses already and have so much space in their houses that they've got a whole section of their house or rooms that they can rent out. The problem is people who live in Astoria who are hardworking, who don't have a place to live. And I want Astoria to be a place where people who work in Astoria can live in Astoria, and I don't ever want an Astorian to have to compete for rent with a tourist. It's not worth it. Thank you very much for, you know, all of the people who have Airbnbs who tell people to go to Fort George, you know, but it's not worth it. We need places for our workers to live. We care about the people that work for us. We don't want them to have to live outside of town. We want them to have a good life in Astoria. I want Astoria to be a year-round community. I'm from this town, and I care deeply about the future of Astoria. And that's why I'm here doing what I'm doing right now. In my 9-year experience on the Planning Commission and 2 years on City Council, I believe that this reform could be the single biggest way that we could protect the character of our city into the future.
Boy, I feel compelled to say something. I'm not sure what. What I can say, and to both Zeddy and to Cindy and to Arlene and to Bruce and to all of you out here who are paying attention to these issues, is that this is all new to me. I've got a great seat to sit at right now, because I'm not coming into this with some preordained idea about what's working and what's not. And I think that it's just great that people are standing up, and I'm encouraging people to talk about these issues. I think we need a good, civil, robust discussion about this. I'm not sure if equating Airbnbs with affordable housing is necessarily correct, or that that affordable housing may be it's a bigger issue. It has to do with really having a place to live, not a room. I mean, rooms are nice for a little while. It can be transitory, and those are good. I also know that people that have Airbnbs, many just have a great enjoyment for what they're doing. They're only running out of room. It's pretty basic. I think there are a lot of issues around that as a city we need to address. We need to get clarity on this. We need to establish, if we're going to have Airbnbs, we need a level playing field with hotels and motels. You can't get away with having an unsafe residence and having people stay there. You can't have a room without egress. You can't have a room without good fire protection, at least a good alarm that wakes up the whole house. These are things that they don't have to do right now. So I certainly have issues with the way Airbnb is set up right now. But I think as far as finding affordable housing and rentals for people that work here, I think it's hugely important. And I think that we have to be sure that we have the discussion that it's not just about Airbnbs. It needs to be about what are all the options. How can we encourage people with these buildings downtown or derelict buildings to bring them up to snuff? How can we encourage people to create these rooms and these apartments? How can we get, you know, we have a city. I'm busy taking all this in right now. And we have a city with a very limited footprint. We don't have a lot of buildable areas. We've got to use pretty much what we've got. There are some options that will show up. But we have to be looking at those, and we have to find ways to encourage people, because this is all the result of success that Astoria is having right now. And we are being successful. And these are the problems that come with success, and I hope we do it right. So really, I'm grateful for everybody that's here, and I want to encourage, I hope there's a note in the newspaper that says, come on, people, get out there and join in the discussion. So that's it.
Mr. Brownson, if I may, thank you so much for coming into this role with, you know, objectivity and realizing that this is such an important issue. I look forward to dialoguing with you more on this. But, you know, if we add more units of housing, if we restore downtown buildings and add apartments, you know, what good is that going to do if they're rented out on Airbnb? Just saying.
Well, that, and I'm just saying, and you're right. So that's where I think we need to, in my mind, I mean, I have a vision. I've used Airbnb, and in my mind, I have this vision of what an Airbnb experience is. And it's a great experience. I really enjoy it. There's somebody there who greets me, and it's very personalized. I get this kind of local tour of a place that I don't know anything about, and I get all these recommendations, and it's a great experience. But I only see it as that somebody having that spare bedroom and maybe with an extra bathroom, and certainly it's nice to have an extra entrance, but I don't expect anything else. You know, we're going to be talking about the accessory dwelling units is coming up. It's going to come before the commission here in a month. And within that discussion, homestays have been brought up, and currently we're asking for no homestays. And so I think about that, and I think about the distinction between building a tiny home on your lot or fixing up your garage into a full-service apartment. I don't see that as a Airbnb. I see that as a rental unit, as some place where somebody can stay. But somebody that has, you know, some space in their basement to make a little extra money so that they can help, like he said, take care of their historic building, you know, put a little bit more into it, and find ways to get rid of the abuses. I think that we've got to pull vacation home rentals out of this whole context too. We've got to, that's a whole different matter that we need to be talking about. And I think it's an important discussion to have with the city too. I don't like the idea of our housing stock being bought up for vacation rentals. So
it's happening.
And it is happening, that's right. And when I see a whole house on Airbnb, I think, that's not Airbnb.
It is on Airbnb,
I know,
though.
That's the that's a problem. And so I recognize, the point is I recognize the problems. And I think that we really need to work hard towards good solutions for our community. And wherever that falls, as long as we have a good dialogue, I'm going to be a happy camper. That's all.
So I'll add just a few comments. I agree with Councillor Price and Nemelwill on the desired end state. I think I have a difference of opinion perhaps on means to achieve the end state. And I think our desired end state that we can all agree to is, you know, we need more housing for permanent residents. And we don't want to destroy the character of our community that we love so much. But I don't see evidence that homestays are the primary culprit and problem to be attacked here. I think an outright ban on homestays, to me, it's like taking a chainsaw to a problem that we might be able to address with pruning saws, or at least I'd rather try the pruning saws first. That could take the form of, for instance, imposing caps on the number of homestays allowed. Right now, it only requires, in where it is required, a business license. We could require a permit. And my understanding is that even for those who already have a homestay, while we can't take away their ability to maintain a homestay, we can change the conditions. For instance, we can create a permit requirement. We can make the permit expensive, not the $35 that – is that what a business license costs, $35 roughly?
Base,
well, you could have a permit that costs $250, $350. We can't – unfortunately, we don't have any money in our budget to incentivize – people with a four-bedroom home to suddenly rent out their rooms to permanent residents. That costs money to incentivize, but perhaps we can, you know, disincentivize people from doing homestay if we think they might do a permanent rental instead by requiring a permit, capping the number of permits, and making it a hefty fee to get those permits. I just think there's some policy issues that we could address that would be the equivalent of using a pruning saw on this problem rather than a chainsaw of just an outright ban. But lots to discuss, and I look forward to respect all my colleagues' opinions and look forward to discussing it further.
Okay. I think it's been a very fruitful discussion, both from the audience and also from the council, and we'll keep working on this. I wish that there was some fairy godmother that would come and buy Clatsop Care and turn it into affordable housing. That's my wish. So if anybody has any fairy godmothers hidden away somewhere, let us know, because I think that would be a great use of that building. So thank you all for coming. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing you the next meeting.